Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time to reload this week's news. What a week it was. Lots to talk about, from Northwestern Wildcats success history. Maybe that's the story. Maybe that's the story that we'll remember in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now. Or maybe it'll be the Trump budget. Or maybe something, maybe the giraffe. Maybe April the giraffe finally having that baby. Hopefully it happens this week. In studio with me tonight to break down this week's news, Heather Sharon. She is a City Hall reporter for DNA Info. Good to see you, Heather.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
And, of course, Ray Long, investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune, as well as the former Springfield bureau chief. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you too.
All right, so let's get right to it. This is a little bit of a toss up because Northwestern obviously is a big sports story, but the biggest story of the week, Ray, what do you got as the biggest story of this week?
Well, I would just like to add to that Northwestern thing that, you know, later in the show you talk about what is remembered 500 years from now. I don't want to steal the thunder early, but really they're undefeated for 79 years in the NCAA tournament.
No other university can claim that.
No, that's right. They're undefeated. Someone's going to make a compassionate sports movie about that.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, undefeated. All right, so what do you got for biggest story?
I got to say it's the Trump budget. It changes. It really shifts the whole dynamic of this nation if it goes through in any kind of form similar to the way he proposed it. Just here in Chicago, $300 million for the Great Lakes restoration could be zeroed out. That's what he's calling for. And so there's also, and Heather knows more about this, but $19 million that the city could be losing too. And so there's all kinds of repercussions, sanctuary cities, et cetera, et cetera. This is really a clarion call for a lot of people who want to stand up for the environment, stand up for the arts, stand up for sanctuary cities, immigration, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
The mayor was very clear this morning that he views budgets as almost moral documents. And I think it's true. You spend your money on things you care about. If you care about the ballet, you've got a membership. If you care about art, you go to the Art Institute. And he said that Trump's budget just doesn't represent the values that he believes Chicago holds. And, he said that he didn't think it was going to go through. But that he was disappointed that Democrats in Congress, and of course he's a former congressman, you know, almost Speaker of the House, former Chief of Staff to Barack Obama, that he was disappointed there would have to be fights to get us back to where we are at this point to just sort of maintain.
Well, do you think that is this really a budget that specializes in number crunching, or is this really sort of like a shot across the bow or a sort of ideology?
You know, I think that when you have somebody like Senator John McCain come out right away as soon as it's released saying that budget will not pass the Senate, I think that gives you a sense of perhaps the, you know, crystal ball, you know, prognostication of what it could happen. But I think Ray is right. It shifts the conversation to, should we fund the arts? You know, that's a question we were not asking four years ago.
Ray, I would ask that. I mean, it's interesting because the actual numbers, the budget doesn't, it's not an exercise in shrinking the budget.
It's not
getting us back. That has nothing to do with debt. This really is just shifting money, saying we're going to give a ton of money to military. Yeah. Everything else can go away.
Right. A billion more for nuclear weapons is that kind of thing. One of the things that strikes me also is that it's sort of counter populist in many ways, because even though Trump ran a populist campaign, we all know that, we all saw that, but we're seeing now that he's looking at cutting areas that could really hurt the people who voted for him. And I think that's very strange, but there's also parts of this budget that I think are more traditional conservative Republican values here. And so he's introducing a budget that is more with the established conservatives, probably because they're more organized, right? And so he has to work with them to some degree, and plus it's a mammoth thing to try to just shift all these different areas that he's
talking about. When you create an ideology, or at least a discussion in America, where it plays the idea that, we shouldn't have handouts, No one should get something free. Right. I mean, that's a lot of the voters will come out and say, yeah, I agree with this because I don't want my tax money going to something I don't believe in. I mean, that is a false kind of discussion because the biggest spending areas that the government spend has nothing to do with this stuff. It has to do with health care. It has to do with Social Security. It has nothing to do with whether or not you're funding the National Endowment for the Arts.
Well, it also depends on how you define handout. Is the mortgage interest tax deduction, mm-hmm. which primarily white, middle class people benefit from, is that a handout? What about farm subsidies? What about, you know, a whole host of things that if you listen to primarily Republicans, they would not consider to be government handouts.
Right.
However, you know, I think if you total them up, they would probably, even today, spend more on programs like that than they would on food stamps or, you know, the arts or PBS or, you know, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Well, they made a strong, I mean, the budget director made a strong point, and you can argue with it all day long, but the idea that, you know, I can't continue to look at coal miners in the eye and the face and say, hey, we're going to give your money to Big Bird. I mean, that concept is a concept that has not just played out this year. It's been something we've been arguing about since Ronald Reagan.
Well, absolutely. And you see this year the kind of long-term effects of people being unemployed and being underemployed. And you see that they're not getting those jobs back. And that is what really played to the Trump crowd. You know, the union guys in Ohio are going to be saying, hey, I need to have that job back in the mine, right? I need to have that job back in the factory, those kinds of things. They weren't worried about Hillary Clinton's issues on gender and all of the other types of things that may be politically correct.
Well, it's very interesting. This is going to be an interesting one.
Well, I think there was a story in the Washington Post this week that interviewed people who went to the president's rally in Nashville, and they spoke to a family who one person had just lost their job. And because they lost their job, they qualified for a higher health care subsidy. And the reporter in me, you know, caught my breath and sort of had a really, you know, sort of honestly sick feeling in my stomach because that woman had thought that the president had already passed his health care program and that was why they got more benefits when, of course, those benefits were provided for. By Obama, and, you know, it's Friday. On Monday, you know, if we'd been doing this on Monday, the big story would have been the Congressional Budget Office telling us that untold millions of people were going to lose health care
coverage. And subsidies it's interesting. You go right back to the same conversation about handouts and entitlement. Subsidies have, for all of the arguments that we've heard about, the death spirals and what's happening to Obamacare, the subsidies were on a scale. If the premium went up, the subsidy went up. That has changed in the new American Health Care Act that is being proposed in Congress. Lots to talk about. We'll continue to talk about. Ray Long, Heather Sharon in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do overreported and underreported here on The Download, 720 WGN. Breaking down, reloading this week's news on The Download. Ray Long, Heather Sharon in studio. Heather is City Hall reporter for DNA Info, dnainfo.com. Also, Ray Long is an investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune, former bureau chief in Springfield. All right, before we move, let's keep going. Let's go to Anthony. Anthony, what do you want to say about the Trump budget proposal?
Well, I just I was listening to Sharon's comments about the mortgage insurance break
that
some middle-class homeowners get. You know, at the end of the day, the middle class is still paying taxes at the end of the year. I'd like to see entitlement stop the people who've been on government dole from cradle to grave. You know, there's a difference in getting a little something back and living off other people.
Sure.
You know, let's cut those out.
Well,
you know,
I mean, there's no doubt about that, but I would also push back in saying a lot of cuts to the EPA, cuts to the arts, the NEA, other places aren't necessarily affecting that argument.
Well, I'd rather see those things not cut and cut back on the welfare and the food stamp program. And as far as the Obamacare, that was about to fail. Democrats keep acting like, you know, that Trump's coming in and ruining something that's doing well. More insurers are pulling out of that. It's got about 3 years left at the current pace that it's going. Something has to be done regardless.
Right. Well, no doubt about that, Anthony.
So to try to blame Trump trying to take insurance for millions of people, you know, I don't know. We got to do something different. In Illinois, to complain about losing federal funds when they continue to defy federal law, hey, you know, what goes around comes around. You know, maybe if you got on board, maybe some more money would come your way.
Thanks, Anthony. I mean, Thanks for that. Okay. Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Sorry about that. I had to cut him off there. There's a lot there. I mean, I think that what you're getting there from Anthony is that bootstrap conversation that if you take away entitlements, food stamps, other places to the poor, to people in poverty, you may, you know, like they'll figure it out.
You know, yeah,
like, and I feel like there's that argument's been going on for as long as I've been born.
Right. There are some people who could use more help than others. There's just no doubt about that. Right. And, you know, you can argue that, well, they should work harder and all that, and or they should try to find a job, or they should do this or that. But, you know, when you get past it, not everybody is capable of doing the kind of things that everybody else can, that the general populace can.
And not everybody starts from the same spot.
Right.
Right.
You know what
exactly.
I mean? If you grow up in a house where, you know, your parents didn't go to college, maybe didn't even graduate high school, you know, the stats, the data show that you start at a disadvantage. Yeah. And the question is, and I don't know the answer to this question, you know, do we as a society want to pool our money and say we are going to help those who start at a disadvantage, whether that be race, whether that be class? And that, I think, was what the mayor was getting at this morning when he said that, you know, we in Chicago embrace these values, at least, you know, in his mind, and that is not reflected in the Trump budget.
312-981-7200. We are reloading this week's news. Let's move on to overreported and underreported. I think we all agree. We all came back with the same assessment from this week that the most overreported story was the Trump tax returns. When we come back.
Yeah. Yes.
It was Rachel Maddow got to the 2005 tax returns of Donald Trump, made a show out of it. Got social media all worked up and really didn't give us much more than we already knew.
Yeah. I mean, she did have the cover sheets, basically, of a 2005 Donald Trump tax return. But when you first saw it on Twitter, you thought, holy smoke, somebody has really unloaded it all. You're going to hear everything.
And
you're going to learn a lot.
The danger of hype. I mean, I don't know. I've been accused of being old school, but, you know, I have a hard time sometimes, you know, tweeting my stories and saying, hey, look at what I'm doing, because I think that hype can be such a double-edged sword.
Rachel's great in being able to tell a story, and she's done great with sort of expanding a story. It was a tweet in question where it says, we have Donald Trump's tax returns. Seriously.
Yeah.
And it just got everybody, and I think that they would probably go back and redo that tweet, because I think that made the expectations, like you said, Ray, that we were going to get everything. We're finally going to get this story that everybody's been asking for, going to rallies over, everything. And when we found out what it was, just a cover sheet from 2005, that in the weirdest where we're living, the idea of where we're living, that it could have possibly been leaked by the president. That's the story itself is another one of these, like, just brain squeezes.
Well, if there was news there, it was that President Trump paid the alternative minimum tax, and he wants to do away with the alternative minimum tax.
That was a good point.
So that if his proposal had been law, he would have not paid $25 million in taxes. He would have paid closer to $5 million in taxes. And I think that is, you know, a reasonable thing to sort of question, you know, how would, you know, a president's policies affect their family? I think it's a reasonable question. But again, I get back to the hype. If that tweet said, in 2005, President Trump paid X, you know, but his proposals would have had him pay Y, I think it's a completely different media
may have
event.
Resonated even more. I mean, because it became a media story instead of a story about what was actually in the tax return.
I think they probably drew eyeballs to Rachel's show, and I was tuned in. I usually don't tune into Rachel. I do
you
occasionally.
You fell for it, right?
But
fell for
sure.
It.
Yeah, I was suckered in. Well, I had to check it out is what happened. So,
a likely story.
Yes.
Yeah,
but,
I mean.
But yeah, it was just bringing people in, and then she just played it out for way too long. She could have said, hey, this is what it is, blah, blah, blah. She gave a long kind of anti-Trump.
It's the worst case of burying the lead I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know,
yeah.
I guess, you know, it also brought up the question that there was a 2005 tax return. We're not sure where it came from. It was a leaked document. It was client copy, so it came from someone who had access to the actual client tax returns, Donald Trump's. But it again brought up this idea that the White House jumped in front of that story, and they released the information beforehand. And it just begs the question, why are we playing this game? Why are we not having access to 2006 to 2016? What is happening?
True.
Because I don't even know what the argument is anymore, because I thought it was an audit. There was always this sort of flimsy excuse about it. So why is the president not giving his tax returns? And does that actually hurt give rise to the chaos theory that surrounds what's in it?
Well,
I mean, the argument during the election was it had to be pretty bad if he wasn't just releasing it and just, Ray and I have heard it, it's not the cover up that it's not the crime that's going to kill you. It's the cover up that's going to kill you.
Right.
I don't know what those are in those tax returns. Would I want somebody to mail them to me, as apparently happened to David K. Johnson? Sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead. My address is.
Yeah, no. Right.
But, it's all about context. I also think that what we saw on social media was sort of this, desire for some smoking gun. You know what I mean? Because I saw so many tweets. This is it. This is it. You know what I mean? And, I love history. And, Watergate was a steady drip, 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 drip of, okay, this piece fits and that piece fits. And I don't know if it's because the news cycle is so fast or what it is, but there was no patience with Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, well, I think we're just running out of patience in general, because this story has dragged on drip, drip, drip
right.
for a year plus, just with the campaign.
Well, plus on the state level, we have Governor Rauner, who has not revealed his taxes too. I mean, he tells you how much, but he shows you the cover page. He doesn't even give you much context of what's going on. So that was a thing that really got under Governor Pat Quinn's craw too, that we've got this millionaire guy running who knows what, and we don't even know it.
I love that we've gotten to a point in the news cycle that the overrated story, the overreported story, is tax returns. It's ridiculous. Ray Long, Heather Sherrone in studio. We'll take a break and get an update on tonight's news from Rob. We'll come back. We'll do the underreported and get to our winners and losers as well. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download, 720 WGN. We're reloading this week's news. Heather Sherrone is City Hall reporter for DNA Info Chicago, and Ray Long, investigative reporter with the Chicago Tribune. We are talking about this week's news, 312-981-7200. If you want to get in on it, you can text, you can call. We've already done the biggest story and overreported. Let's get to the underreported. Heather, what do you got for underreported?
Well, there was the 3-year-old boy who was shot in Englewood.
Terrible.
His father was charged today. Apparently, he left him home alone with his siblings, and they were playing cops and robbers, and one of his siblings shot him in the head. And, I've got two little kids. I can't even imagine the pain that entire family must be here. But, as we were saying before we went on the air, it's very similar to the other Englewood case where there was, several kids left home alone in a just dilapidated, dangerous building that had to be raised by the city with, using the stove as heat, which is as dangerous as you can get. I think that story didn't really even register.
I think the desensitized part of death and violence and little kids is starting to get underreported.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And the way we'll talk, you'll see newspapers and DNA, you'll report on it, but it's not something that's feeling the outrage. Now, this is a little different story because this is a sibling. This isn't,
it's not random.
I think you get more of an outrage if it's a gang member who just is shooting wild and he shoots a 3-year-old.
Well, sure, because we all tell ourselves, oh, I would never leave my kids home alone with an unsecured weapon. I wouldn't leave them home alone, to begin with, much less with a gun just floating around. But, I can't help but wonder if that's just a story we all tell to make ourselves feel better, and that if we don't, we all lose something because we allow, as a society, we're not collectively saying this is unacceptable. What right. are we as a group of people, Chicagoans, going to do?
What struck me about this too is back in the day, in the 90s, I would be covering all these terrible cases of child neglect, right? If you grew up in Chicago, you remember the Keystone Children, right?
Sure.
19 found in squalor. President Clinton compared them to living in Calcutta, right? So we've got all this history here, and we still can't move past the idea that we're finding children in places that, as the police spokesman said, deplorable conditions.
That is a good. That's a, that. That has to be the number one underreported story. You're right. And it, and again, it was on the front pages of the websites, and the newspapers covered it. But like you said, it just didn't get to a point where there was any fervor around what the impact or what was in the story.
I mean, since I cover City Hall, you know, my gauge whether it's accurate or not is, was the mayor forced to talk about it? And he wasn't forced to talk about it because there's, you know, there was, you know, a dozen other things that we needed to ask him about: the Trump budget, healthcare. The police department, I mean, that's a whole other thing that happened this week that, you know, the police revised their, you know, use of force policy, and mm-hmm. police department critics say it's a step backward. So, you know, I got to put myself on the hook there because I could have asked the mayor about it and I didn't because there were other things that, you know, were closer to the top of my mind.
I would put the police reform story as well in underreported. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it had to do with the way that the police department kind of set that up with a late afternoon press conference.
Absolutely.
And everything they did to almost bury the story that wasn't really a story. And they, and I don't know, like, it feels like we're seeing more and more of that even tonight. I mean, the City Hall did a sort of a big news dump at the end of, you know, St. Patrick's Day Friday, talking about some changes to the city council meetings and how much the Cubs cost police officers. So it feels like it's almost, there's a recipe, there's a formula. If you want it underreported, there's a way to go about that.
Well, certainly Friday has always been the big dump day, yeah. Right? And that's why the Saturday paper is a great paper to read, too.
Let's because take out, it has take all out kinds the trash of stuff. Day.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Ray, what do you got for underreported? Because
well,
I agree on this one.
Well, I think it kind of on the national, international stage, it's just now gaining traction, but it's this whole idea that North Korea and the U.S. may get into some kind of conflict here. And, you know, Secretary of State Tillerson basically pulled the plug on negotiations, saying that they didn't work. And so we've got this ramping up of North Korean nuclear missile possibilities here, and all of the United States and its allies, especially in that Asian
yeah.
area.
Japan, right.
Yeah,
Korea,
they, were,
right.
they were firing test missiles there just a few days ago, right? And so now you got to start thinking, we're talking about nuclear war here as a possibility.
And again, you know,
that was an underreported story.
Well, and the president tweeted it, and he tweeted about it this morning, and he criticized China for, I'm using air quotes, you know, playing, you know, the whole situation poorly. And, you know, on any other day where you don't have Angela Merkel in the White House, mm-hmm. you know, and
right.
he wouldn't look at her in the Oval Office, he wouldn't shake her hand, you know, it just, you know, any other day that would be the top story. I said this when, you know, the Kim Jong-un's, you know, half-brother was killed in the Malaysian airport with, you know, they believe a nerve agent, and that was the third story on the nightly news
just,
that
there
night.
Isn't, I mean, there's, I think North Korea just is a desensitized, there's something about the idea that we've heard over and over and over about these missile tests and strange things.
Threats and threats
that I think the American people are like, and it doesn't help. And another thing, too, is Secretary of State Tillerson did not take the normal media people with him on this tour. You know, he only took one conservative website with him, and there, you know, obviously they're still covering it, but
well, they're not producing daily coverage,
right? And yeah. I think that yeah. has something to do with the fact yeah. that, you know, it is underreported in the way that, you know, this is the first time we've heard the United States talk like this,
yeah,
at least
right.
in the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. It's like, it's funny that there's one, I just have this mental picture of one journalist going, let me write this down. Am I getting it right?
You did say we could go into a conflict
right,
here, right?
Right, right. Good. I guess trying to get this right because the whole world is watching us.
Yeah, right.
right. So, yeah, so those are the underreported stories.
It's picking up speed. I mean, people are starting to realize what the magnitude of this is.
I also think that it's just a indication of how many different fires are burning right now. You know, you've got healthcare, you've got the budget, you've got Russia, you've got
Trump's Twitter.
You know, baseless claims of wiretapping. I mean, so at some point, you know, as a journalist, you've got to say, okay, well, I can write four stories today,
yeah.
but I don't get to the fifth or the sixth.
It's a fire hose right
yeah.
now, especially
it's
if you're in D.C.
Ray Long, Heather Sharon in studio. Okay, so here's what we'll do. We'll do winners and losers when we come back. We'll take a break. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
You got copies of stories. Yay. I can just read them aloud.
We're just going to read everything. 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman here. Ray Long, the investigative reporter from the Chicago Tribune. Heather Sharon, City Hall reporter at DNA Info. We are reloading this week's news. We are ready for, I guess this would be the lightning round, the winners and losers.
Zoom.
But I have to say, right, I mean, you know, the winner has to be Northwestern basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the number
one,
right?
Go UNU. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, come on. It's an amazing story, and it was fun to watch them squeak out. And it also, I mean, I guess if you say Northwestern's a winner, then Vandy's a loser, the kid from
and
Vandy.
Let's just not forget to mention that U of I didn't even make the tournament.
We had Coach Doug Bruno in here, the DePaul women's basketball team won today, and they are on to the second round as well.
Excellent.
But I mean, how great is it? I mean, it's the story of the tournament and at a national level, and you're seeing, you know, from the stars who come out to watch and everything. This was it's a primetime game tomorrow for the Cats and Gonzaga. I mean, you really couldn't draw it up any better.
Right. It's going to be great for recruitment, too. I mean, you get Julia Louise Dreyfus out there screaming and cheering for you. You know, and of course, the tube is like putting her on in between
every
shots.
30 seconds.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
But, that whole deconstruction of the last 2 minutes is like a nightmare for Vanderbilt.
It's going to hurt.
Yeah. And also, I also say that I feel like something has happened to college basketball. Like in a strange way, like the great thing about March Madness is that, you know, it's just like for 30 seconds to go and you're like, here we go.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
with touches and fouls and looks and this and going over to the screen, it's taking the joy out of the last 30 seconds. I was like, you're ruining this for me. I've been standing next to my TV for 15 minutes now.
Yeah,
like,
that
there's
last
something about
30
there.
Seconds
yeah.
is the, you know, last half hour. Really.
It really is.
But, you know, just imagine what this town or the program at Northwestern would be like if they beat Gonzaga tomorrow.
I mean, it really is. I mean, something to think about. I mean, and I was watching the preview tonight. They had they were talking about the matchup, and Gonzaga has a guy on this squad who's 7'2" that no one can stop.
Yeah.
A big,
yeah.
huge guy. That, he's yeah. like a mountain. They say he's like
yeah.
a mountain.
Yeah.
And
so we
like,
should enjoy this yeah, moment
we
while
should.
It lasts.
I'm glad I'm here.
I think it was last night I told the story of being a kid who I loved the DePaul Blue Demons, and there was a team that made it to the second round, and they got Duke. They got Danny Ferry's Duke.
Oh, man.
And it was like, yeah, it was just all the mantra was as long if we could just keep it at 11. We're down 11. Just keep it at 11.
Yeah. And, you know, that was ended probably up before three-pointers, right?
So anyway, all right, some other stories. I have Mayor Rahm Emanuel. I felt this week that it was an underreported story as well, and I know, Heather, you covered this. He has been talking about this since Malcolm X College, that he wants to bring the private sector to the table when it comes to violence in Chicago. He comes up with a big score for summer jobs.
Yeah, so 30,000 summer jobs for teens and young adults age 14 to 24. Go apply now. The applications are open through May 15th, and this is a major prong of his anti-violence program, because, you know, if you've got something to do, if you've got a goal you're working toward, he said, you know, you're not going to be out there, you know, with a gun, or you're not going to be stealing, you know, you're going to have a sense of yourself, I think is the way that he put it. And, you know, I got to say, I went through the After School Matters when I was a public school, high school student. I did the journalism program. That was sort of my first introduction to Chicago journalism. Unfortunately, it's stuck. I haven't been able to.
Rahm may try to cut that out now.
I haven't been able to get out of it since, but he also is doing this on his own. Let's be clear about that. It's only city
story,
only city money. There's no state money, because
no
we've
feds.
Talked about the state problem, and there's no federal money. And, you know, I wrote a ton of stories about all of Trump's tweets to the mayor about what, you know, terrible job he's doing about Chicago violence, and the mayor went to DC and said, okay, here's what you can do. And one of the things he said was, I need money for after school jobs, I need money for summer jobs. the federal government has not responded.
Well, I mean, it's a big win for Mayor Emanuel to step up, and with all of the political strife that Illinois is in and the federal government pointing, for him to twist the arms of the private sector to say, we're doing this together. It's a big win.
And it's 2,000 jobs of those 30,000 jobs that are set aside for high-risk students, and part of the people who get those jobs will also get mentoring and mental health counseling services. So, you know, the idea is that if you can get those 2,000 kids sort of moving in the right direction, you solve problems before they start.
Ray, what do you think?
Well, we'll see if it works. I mean, this is the big test, right? It's not small numbers. We're not looking at one small neighborhood. We're looking at a possibility of things happening all throughout the city. And, you know, it's one of those deals where FDR used to say, if we have a problem, we'll try something. If that doesn't work, we'll try something else. So that is kind of what we've got to do with the violence issue. And this is one thing he's jumping.
It's all like one big puzzle when you talk about the Trump budget and really saying that, you know, private sector is going to have to step up. And we've seen it with Rauner as well, where it's just like private sector will take on some of these things.
Yeah.
Rahm Emanuel, in a forced way, had to do that and did. So there we go. Losers. All right. So what do we have for losers? What do we we already said the kid from Vanderbilt, which we don't want to even say. I feel bad. He's an 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid. But
well, the Secret Service did not have a great week.
No.
So man breached the security perimeter at the White House. We learned tonight he was loose on the grounds for 17 minutes. He actually shook the handle of the entrance to the presidential residence. Yeah, that's
there's no
rough.
Zapper on that
thing. Yeah, we're like shaking our heads here, right?
and then, of course, a Secret Service agent in New York lost a laptop with schematics of Trump Tower and apparently information related to the email probe of Hillary Clinton. I'm honestly not sure.
That's the one that I'm not even sure what that means.
Yeah.
That's
going
to show up in my mailbox any day.
Any day.
Tribune Tower, 435.
The best part, that whoever stole that is this probably some kid who's just like,
he's
not
probably already moved.
He's trying to play Minecraft on it.
Yeah, he's like, how do I load this app on here? Like, he has no concept of what anything's on there. Let's hope. Yeah. Or, like I said earlier, it's a beginning plot line to a 24 episode.
Well,
so I
did hear that they have the ability to wipe it remotely. So I imagine they have, in fact, already done that.
I hope so. Right. It's on somebody's to-do list.
The whole security thing at the White House, though, is troubling because they've had breaches before. They had it under Obama before Obama, too. But, you know, come on. It makes you think that these kinds of movies that you've seen where people go over the fence, you know, could very well happen.
Yeah. Also, I mean, this is, I guess you put this in losers, the Rauner Madigan poll this week saying both of them are trending in the negative numbers. I mean, it's, I guess the only thing to pull from that story is, well, I mean, it's equal hate.
Yeah, Rauner's hate has some velocity, it seems, right now.
Yeah.
Although Madigan still has the lead, and we're kind of at the halfway point of the race here to 2018.
Right. Well, okay.
Well, and there's still no agreement for the Chicago public schools, who may have to end classes June 1st as opposed to June 20th. Rauner made another proposal this week that the Democrats didn't sort of greet with open arms. So, that I think will be the big story for looking ahead.
And it's interesting. That's an interesting story. The city actually trying to block the Chicago Teachers Union, trying to do a one-day strike on May 1st. I mean, it seems like the same storyline just coming back and I feel like I'm in some sort of loop.
Well,
you know?
How do you think they feel in Springfield? It is Groundhog Day on steroids down there.
All right, we come back.
Picturing the giant.
Maybe they're all losers.
I know, but you're right. I mean, it is. It's at a certain point, like, you have these moments where you're like, I think we are living in the Matrix, that these stories are just repeating themselves. And you're like, I think there's a glitch. I'm recognizing myself.
Did we take the blue pill?
Yeah, right.
We should
it's
take
Westworld,
the red
man.
Pill.
We live in Westworld.
Right.
But it's mundane state politics. That's the Westworld we live in. All right,
rabbit hole.
Yeah, the rabbit hole coming up after the break. We'll do what story sucked us down the rabbit hole, and also which story we'll remember from this week in 5 years, 10 years, 500 years from now. It's the download. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We're reloading this week's news with Heather Sharon. She is the City Hall reporter for DNA Info Chicago. Ray Long, investigative reporter for Chicago Tribune. longtime bureau chief down at Springfield. We have got through biggest story, overreported, underreported, winners and losers. It's time for the story that really grabbed us, that sucked us down the rabbit hole. Ray, you and I share one. I didn't really get a story. Mine was Facebook comments.
Yeah.
But it was very similar to the idea that, you know, a lot of what came out of the Trump budget was what's going to happen to artists.
Right. And it's important to a town like Chicago that is so rooted in community and community arts and the whole idea of putting theater out there or having outdoor performances or just bringing arts to the community, whether it's painting or whether it's bands or whatever it is. It's part of the fabric of Chicago.
It's also economic development.
Right.
You can't tell me that, you know, Hamilton hasn't been a huge driver of visits, you know, because that show's been sold out every night since it opened since September, and it's, you know, sold out at least, you know, for the next year. You know, it's just amazing.
They could run it 24 hours a day.
So, you know, it's not just,
I got tickets at 7 o'clock in the morning.
But so it's not just, you know, what I like to think of as, you know, floofy, feel good, everybody likes to paint, and, you know, art is nice. You know, this is, you know, really, it's jobs. You know what I mean? It's, you know, the people who feed the art. It's the people who feed the artists. It's people who feed the people who go to the shows. It's the bars near the, you know, galleries.
I think about the movies that are in the TV shows that
Absolutely.
Have been coming
Well,
into,
all of those
in
fit
Chicago.
Into the, I mean, what I think it was the Facebook comments on the Trib story, Howard Wright's story about
this is a tremendous story,
the culture,
putting it
together. Whatever it was. You know, and it was nuanced. I mean, you have some on there that are just, you know, go Trump or go, or, you know, go
we
jump
gotta
in late
set
Trump,
priorities.
Right? But, I, you know, there was an argument and one that I've heard, and I don't know if I have the answer to, which is this idea that if it's great art, it'll survive without government funding, that we should get, the government should be out of the business of funding the arts. This is something that's new to our society. I mean, it wasn't until this, I think they said the 80s, even the 60s or the 70s or 80s, one of those decades where we started to subsidize the arts. That as human beings and societies, we've had arts that have survived without government subsidies. I mean, I think about it in my head. And then on the other side, you get the argument that says, well, listen, this isn't big money.
Yes.
Stop acting like this is millions and millions of dollars. The false sort of equivalency of what do I say to coal miners when I, you know, about Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's not, they're not the same. We're talking about minuscule numbers
about cents per person per year.
And so how important are the arts to our society is the first question. Then the second question is, if they're that important, if you can make that argument, is there a role for the government to essentially deliver help?
Right. And it's the question of whether you want to subsidize different voices, just like different artists or poets. You've got different types of sounds. It kind of reminds me of the time when public TV and public radio first came on the air, right? We're saying we're hearing all this concert music that we'd never heard before because we've been listening to the Beatles or whoever. I'm dating myself there, but that is about the time that it changed. And then you were opened to a whole different world, and public radio, no doubt, has opened up the world view of many people to hear all kinds of a variety of shows, and same for public TV, that you wouldn't have, and you may not have if you shut off the
money. There was a great quote that's going around Facebook, a great site if you guys haven't been on it, it's great.
10 out of 10 would
really
recommend.
Great, really great. Very talented. But there's a great quote of Mr. Rogers testifying to the Senate hearing about public TV. And he says that, you know, right now it takes a 2%. This was in the 70s. He was talking about maybe even earlier. The idea of, like, listen, the percentage it takes, you know, an NEA grant gives us $6,000. That's enough for 2 minutes of a cartoon. And the cartoons are, you don't want the cartoons because they have, you know, whatever, they're bashing over people, kids over the head. We teach them about little things like the I think he called it inner child drama, about haircuts, about fights with siblings, about adjusting to family situations. Things that, you know, the people who are making cartoons on the Cartoon Network, it's not necessarily their bag to do that.
Yeah.
And so the question becomes, you make more money if you make cartoons. So the idea that the market will figure it out, well, the market has figured it out and said those things are not valuable. You can't make money off them. So therefore, they don't exist. Well, that's the problem. I have a problem with that.
I mean, it's also, you know, in a weird way, elitist because, you know, wealthy people will find quality programming for their children. You know, they'll buy a subscription to Netflix. They'll, you know, they'll do whatever needs to be done.
It's the argument of HBO, Sesame Street going to HBO, right?
So, you know, it's not going to be me, essentially, that would suffer, or my kids, but it would be the people, the coal miner, or the single mom in Detroit, like the president said, who doesn't have that discretionary income and whose kids wouldn't have access to Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood or Sesame Street or Word Girl or Super Y. I know a lot about children's programming.
Wow.
So, but again, it's like, it's a value, you know, what do we value as a society?
What
you know what I mean?
Earlier, yeah.
And, you know, I think that for a lot of people, perhaps on the left side of the political world, in some ways, we thought those questions were settled. You know what I mean? Like, we had those debates with Mr. Rogers. You know, we funded the arts. You know, right. But now, I think, like you said, the paradigm has shifted. And those questions are up for grabs again. So I think that's why there were all those Facebook comments. Because people are sort of asking themselves these questions in a way I don't think that we've asked ourselves
And the piece that's missing, and it always gets me, is that to be an artist... to give that back to our society, to paint a mural on us and make your neighborhood a better place, and to it has effect on the people in the community.
Sure.
And the money that you're making, you're not making $170,000. You're not getting benefits. You're making $25,000, $30,000, and a lot of times nobody wants to pay for that. So that's where we've come up with social programs to say that this is worth something to our community, to our neighborhood. So that's, to me, I get both. I get the concept that, hey, you know what? At a certain point, the government has changed in the world that we can't afford to, as a society, fund everything.
Well, yeah, there's and that's the context too. You can't just be throwing money again and again and again out the door. You actually have to pay for that. And because our officials at state, local, and national level have not figured out that you can only spend so much, they have put all this money into all these different things, and that opens up the ability for somebody to come in like Trump and slam the door on it and say, hey, we got to get it under control, and then have some sort of an argument to buttress his own argument.
We've seen over and over arts being considered extracurricular.
Right.
We've seen it in schools. It starts in schools. I mean, how many times we grew up maybe with an arts program or an arts class, but so many schools, when they get close to having to cut a budget, art's the first thing to go.
Arts,
now,
music.
We're seeing it happen again now with we talk about federal funding. I mean, what is it with our society where we continually believe or go back to this question of whether or not the arts are important?
You know, it seems discretionary. You know what I mean? Like, I can't eat a painting. You know?
Sure.
I can't, it doesn't, it's not going to keep me warm on a cold night. So there's a part of our, I don't know, caveman brain that says that's a want instead of a need.
Of course, if we're talking about nuclear war with North Korea, you know, you eliminate some of your extras.
Yes,
too.
Yes, indeed.
Well, the other story I had, and we'll get to it quick because I want to get to the last category as well, is I went down the rabbit hole, and I still have a long way to go, on the mixed income fight over the Jefferson Park, the neighborhood northwest side of Chicago. They want to build a building there, a seven-story building, that the alderman had suggested would have 80 units that would be for mixed income for Section 8, as we knew it, or low income.
Well, it would be subsidized housing. And in my previous life, before I covered City Hall, I covered Jefferson Park. And it's, you know, a really big debate about what Jefferson Park should be, because you're having people priced out of Logan Square and Wicker Park who are looking up the Blue Line and saying, you know, where can I find a little bit more space? Where can I find a little bit more cheaper rent? And they're sort of running into people who have lived in Jefferson Park for decades, who bought a bungalow, who have a single family home, and who really sort of feel like they're holding on to their little piece of the American dream by their fingernails. And the Alderman Arena, he supports this new development, which would include a self-storage facility, and that was actually approved by the Plan Commission this week, as well as 100 units that would be developed by a low-income housing developer designed to help people who are being pushed out of Logan Square, pushed out of Wicker Park, and also pushed out of Jefferson
Park. And
that's
the controversy, because there are groups that are coming out that will say, they'll say, well, you know, this is going to change the character. We don't like these big buildings. We don't need
stories. We don't want it four stories. Right. We want it three stories.
Right. And but then the underlying thought, and which gets pulled out a lot, is this really just about not in my neighborhood?
If you say Section 8 on the Northwest Side, that is code straight up for I'm worried about African American and Latinos moving into this area. I heard it all the time. And, you know, the Northwest Side is the same neighborhood. I'm sure Ray remembers this, where Harold Washington went to campaign at St. Pascal's and was greeted with racist graffiti. You know, this is not an area of the city that has, you know, sort of a history of sort of being easily integrated.
Right.
And this is sort of, I think, an economic story as well as sort of, you know, a cultural story or a race story, because this neighborhood is sort of, you know, is in the midst of a change. Like, is it part of the suburbs or is it part of the city? Okay, well, it's technically part of the city, but there are a lot of people who live there who like the fact it's a little bit suburban, but they're still close to the blue line.
It's a fascinating story about the city. I mean, you look at all neighborhoods and it's a microcosm of what a lot of neighborhoods have gone through, and also a strange political story with Alderman John Arena and his perennial challenger, and I forgot his
name.
John Garrido, who continually challenges it for alderman, who is the face and voice of this movement to push back on the alderman in this project.
It's really fascinating because in 2011, Arena won his seat on the council by 30 votes. Like, if you don't think voting matters, like, talk to Alderman Arena. 30 votes. And then so John Garrido ran again in 2015 and I think was, you know, certain that he was going to give the alderman a run for his money, and he did. He forced a runoff, but Arena won by almost 1,500 votes. And so that's, you know,
and those two have had like run-ins. Like,
yes.
I think there's history.
Yes,
there.
there's not a lot of love lost there.
And it's interesting too that your political opponent also becomes the voice of the residents in this way. That especially when you're talking about issues of gentrification and race, I mean, there's a lot going on in Jefferson Park that again mirrors what Chicago.
And I
has
should
gone
mention
through.
That you know Alderman Arena is a very progressive Democrat on the city council. He supported Bernie Sanders in the presidential election. You know, he is not a supporter typically of Rahm Emanuel, the sort of the centrist Democrats, whereas John Garrido ran for Cook County Board President as a Republican. Now, he would tell you city council races are nonpartisan. I'm neither a Republican nor a Democrat, but I think that, you know, people that matters to
that's
people.
That's a good story. There's a little establishment versus firebomber type of attitude there, and people are taking sides.
Absolutely.
Ray Long, Heather Sharon in studio. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get our last segment in where we'll find out what story we're going to remember from this week in 5 years, 10 years, 500 years from now. What are they going to write on the cave when we go back to caves? They'll write the story.
Nuclear winner.
Yeah, nuclear, exactly. Don't give it away. All right, it's a download. Stay with us. All right, we're reloading this week's news here on the download. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. Ray Long, Heather Sharon, here all evening. I enjoy it. Thank you so much for
being
here.
Happy to be here.
Ray, of course, an investigative reporter with the Tribune. Heather is a City Hall reporter for DNA Info. You can check out both their stuff. They're working all the time. That's the good news. That's why they're here on St. Patrick's Day night.
That's right.
Just working.
That's right.
They still got stories to file
that's
tonight.
Right.
All right, so the final category tonight, which story from this week will be remembered in, I don't know, a year, 5 years, 10 years, 500 years from now. Let's start with you, Ray. What do you want to take a stab at? What do you think is going to be the story?
Yeah, I think it'll be a time capsule of this show. Actually, I think We have covered the fears and worries and hopes and dreams of the people of Alsace. But, you know, I think that the one that has the potential here, there's two, actually. Obviously, I talked about as the underreported, and that was the idea that we could be at a point where we're breaking off negotiations with North Korea over nuclear weapons, but also the idea that we could be turning our backs on the Great Lakes without restoring the funding that they expected.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah,
I didn't even think about that. That's strong. It could be like in 100 years. Remember when we had water?
Yeah, right, right. We didn't have to like sift through it. Or
I mean, I don't want to take up all the time, but the idea that Chicago and our world, I mean, we just saw just last year that there were droughts in California. We're like, well, everyone's going to have to move to the Great Lakes. The idea that you take any money away from funding is so head-scratcher.
Uh-huh. Well, what's interesting is the mayor spent a good deal of time this week talking about the river, and he is sort of pitching it as the second waterfront, and there are new towers going up along the river, and he really sort of wants to showcase that. And the Riverwalk, you know, if you haven't gone, it's great on a beautiful day. You know, you can get a drink and sort of watch the world go by. Mm-hmm. You know, we all joke about the river not really being something you want to touch or get up close to, but that's not really true anymore. You know, when, you know, 20
Absolutely,
years ago, there
right.
were 7 species in the river. Now there are close to 70 species in the river. It's significantly cleaner because of those programs that are on the chopping block, you know, under the president's budget. You know, and, you know, I when I was a kid, the river smelled, you know what right. I mean? Like, there were lots more jokes about on St. Patrick's Day, they would dye it blue, you know, instead of dyeing it green because it was always green.
Right.
You know, I don't know that people remember how bad it was. And that those programs
back,
were, you know,
yeah.
sort of what made the difference.
It's the Cuyahoga River catching on fire.
Right.
Yeah. We don't need
Ohio.
Any of that.
No, we don't need that.
All right, Heather, what do you think? What do you think people are going to remember in 500 years?
I think I agree with Ray in a little bit. I think, you know, getting back to the question of the arts, I think that in many, many different respects, President Trump's administration will be a defining moment in that we will, as a society, have to decide, you know, what kind of people are we? You know, right. are we a people who support arts? Are we a people who take care of the environment? You know, are we a people who fund things other than nuclear weapons? Because, you know, I think the one, you know, so, you know, President Trump's budget is sort of a, you know, it shifts all of the domestic spending to military spending. And, you know, is that what our priority right. is as a people? I don't know the answer to that question, but it will be fascinating to sort of
In 500 years, there's going to be a black market for paintings. Do you want drugs? No, I'm looking for a painting.
Yeah.
All right, here's
beauty, give me the beauty.
mine will be a little bit of a prediction. I will say this week will be remembered for the week that the Northwestern Wildcats knocked off the number one seed.
They'll still be undefeated after 500 years.
They're gonna win tomorrow.
And journalists everywhere will be insufferable.
We're gonna go crazy. Everyone will remember this week. It'll be the week that they won their first game of the tournament that they ended up winning. All the way, winning it all, and we'll remember it.
Oh, that's a homer. Yeah, you've gotten totally homer with us here. But I like
it. It could happen. Ray Long, Heather Sharone. Thanks, you guys. It was a great night reloading this week's news. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.